If you go on the EPA's website or type in Google EPA bleach mold, you'll find a nice article that the EPA wrote, and it said you shouldn't use bleach to try to kill mold. In fact, killing mold isn't the objective, because even dead mold may cause an allergic reaction in some.
Well, hello everyone. I'm Dr. David Perlmutter. Welcome back to The Empowering Neurologist. As many of you know, I live in Southwest Florida, in Naples, Florida, and we recently had a hurricane. It was a very, very big deal. And in the aftermath, we were kind of forced to learn about all kinds of things. And one of the things we needed to learn about was mold. Many people left their houses untended and decided to leave in the wet drywall and various other things and developed a problem with mold. Mold has become a very, very big issue down here, as it is anywhere there is a water intrusion into a home, whether from a hurricane or a flood or even a busted water pipe. And in trying to learn more about mold, I bought this book called The Mold Medic, and it is by Michael Rubino. And after reading the book, I thought, this is an important topic. It really is. So we reached out to Michael Rubino and decided to have him on the program and ask him to share his knowledge with us today. Let me tell you a little bit more about Mr. Rubino. Michael Rubino is an air quality expert and wellness advocate, helping to bridge the gap between our homes and their direct impact on health. He's the founder and CEO of Home Cleanse, addressing the worldwide health epidemic caused by poor indoor air quality. The mission of this organization is to improve the quality of life for 100 million people each year by 2030. Through collaboration with over 100 doctors globally, Rubino strives to not only raise awareness globally, but actually also provide solutions to correctly identify and remove the pollutants in what is clearly a worldwide health crisis. He works with people who are immunocompromised, and as such, these are the people who are at greater risk for having problems with mold in terms of a reaction, or people who have acute and sustained reactions to mold exposure. His book that we're going to talk about today is called The Mold Medic, An Expert's Guide on Mold Removal. Michael is an ongoing contributor to Mind Body Green. He hosts a YouTube series, called Mold Talks, where various guests include people like medical experts, as well as various individuals who are recovering from their mold exposure. This is a very, very important topic, and I'm very excited to move ahead with this interview. Well, hello, Michael Rubino. How are you doing today?
Hello. Thank you very much for having me. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
And I'm grateful for your book. And I said in the intro to our viewers that what prompted me, you know, I, as a neurologist, I've been involved in patients with mold sensitivity for an awful long time. But it hit home a couple of months back when we got Hurricane Ian. And we had, you know, quite an experience with that. A lot of homes, about 20% of the homes where we live, have been destroyed. FEMA has said you can't rebuild. So there are a lot of people who had some water in their homes. And I'm hearing about a lot of people who are thinking, well, you know, a little water in the drywall will pull off the baseboards, everything's going to be okay. And you know, with our contractor and the people that we're dealing with here in terms of mold, that doesn't seem like a good plan. So in the beginning of your book, you talked about how you got your first experience with mold and mold remediation way back with Superstorm Sandy. Mm-hmm. So what were you experiencing in terms of what people were doing as it relates to mold back then? What did you discover?
Well, very similar to what's happening after Hurricane Ian. You know, unfortunately, I actually drove around the area of Fort Myers during Hurricane Ian, shortly after Hurricane Ian, and I saw all these lawn signs all scattered all over the place that basically said, you know, we gut your house after the storm, and, you know, with a random phone number. And unfortunately, because you're waiting for insurance or FEMA to kick in, a lot of people are like, look, I need to get in my home. I'm just going to call this guy and see if he can come over and give me a price to fix my home. And so because of that, you get a lot of people who are just haphazardly ripping stuff out, not really remediating properly, leaving these living organisms behind. And of course, if you do have mold or bacteria in your home, when you're ripping stuff out, you're really spreading these particles and toxins all throughout the home. And so that's what we saw a lot in Sandy. And, you know, it was interesting because for many years thereafter Sandy, that's when I started noticing a pattern of people getting sick.
So you mentioned that, so the people tearing their stuff out, their drywall, but you know, the other issue is their porous things in their homes. They're moving them, they're keeping their clothes, they're keeping other things, the couches, the furniture, et cetera. And if the home is contaminated, what happens to the, with those items? I mean, are they just keeping the mold in their home?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have these particles and toxins that do traverse across the air. They settle on our contents, like our fabric couches, our clothes, and we don't really take care of those things properly. And I think that allows this mold to stay there. You know, we have to look at it, mold and bacteria as two different things, right? We have the living organism itself, but then we have the particles or the spores, because certain bacteria will sporulate, certain molds, all mold really sporulates. And so they're constantly creating these particles that are getting aerosolized and traveling through our home. With that being said, you know, it's really these particles and toxins that we're breathing in that makes an impact. So if we're still leaving these particles and toxins behind that we're going to then opportunistically breathe in, it's going to create problems, even if they remove the moldy or, you know, bacterial ridden drywall.
So what happened here was we were told, the word on the street was, whatever level the water was in your house, you've got to take out an additional 2 feet of drywall. How do you feel about that? Is that an appropriate approach?
Well, you have to go a minimum of 2 feet beyond whatever staining you see. So you follow the path that water traveled and you do go a minimum of 2 feet beyond. Why? Because mold, for example, has roots called hyphae. And so it actually grows further than what you actually can see. And so you always want to make sure you're not missing anything and going, you know, above and beyond that mark. You know, 2 feet is real borderline because you're actually supposed to go 2 feet beyond it. And so these, you know, 2 foot flood cuts that people do sometimes, it's just not adequate.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what we're being told here. The other thing we're being told is that if there's mold in a particular area, if you just, and you've heard this 100 times, I'm sure, if you just let it dry out, everything will be fine because mold has to have moisture to survive. Why is that bad advice?
Well, because it doesn't really just disappear. You know, it'll definitely grow slower, but mold is many different organisms colonized together when you have it growing inside of a wall, for example. So yeah, now it may sporulate less, which means that it doesn't really have that ability to grow as much, but it's still sporulating. And if it feels threatened, which it could be if it's drying out and dying, it can produce toxins. So, you know, we don't want to just leave it there and, you know, fix the leak and say that's all we need to do, because history proves that that is not the case. I mean, we have people that have gotten sick many years after Hurricane Sandy, for example, when that leak was resolved, when that problem was resolved, but yet they're still not feeling well. And when you do scientific evaluations, actually getting real lab data back, you're still showing alarming levels of it there. So the just solving the water problem, although that's important, it's not everything. You still have to remove the living organism.
So you don't have to have a hurricane, you don't have to have a flood, even a leaky pipe in the wall, for example, that's been leaking for who knows how long, and people are suddenly at home getting sick. That's something you really need to pay attention to.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'll give you an example. This is pretty public. Gwyneth Paltrow is a client of mine, right? And she has this bathtub in this beautiful bathroom. It had wood floor underneath it. She was taking a bath all the time. You know, we're human beings. We get out, we make a little puddle on the floor and stuff like that. Water was seeping in under her tub for years. Okay. We picked up the tub and found crazy amounts of mold under there was making her sick every time she would take a bath. And here she thought, I'm in my sanctuary. You know, I'm taking a nice bubble bath here, and she's not feeling well after. So, you know, we have to remember that it doesn't have to be a catastrophic storm or a big flood. It can just be, you know, ordinary splashing, a small little pipe leak, even under the sink, you know, kitchen sinks, bathroom sinks. I've seen, you know, the smallest little problem get bigger and bigger over time.
Okay, let's go back to Gwyneth Paltrow's bathtub. You pull off the bathtub, you tear up the floor. What did you find?
Well, we found water damage, signs of water striation on the floor, and we found mold. We actually had the ability to test it. So it was a toxigenic mold called cotomium. And it was growing pretty much all on the bottom side of the tub, which is non-porous, by the way. And then it's also growing on the top surface of the wood floor underneath that tub. And then as we removed that wood floor to get down to the subfloor, it was also growing there. So it was really on three different layers. Which is why it was really important to make sure that when we put that tub back, we were using stone or something else that wasn't going to, hold and trap that moisture well.
So how did you find it? I mean, what made you suspicious that that's where you should look? Or
Well,
that's a
really,
part of the normal drill?
well, it is definitely part of the normal drill based on my experience of what to look for. But I mean, it was a tub on wood floor with no real way of, getting the moisture out when you're coming out of the tub. So it was a pretty clear sign to me that we should test that area. And then obviously through that laboratory evidence, we found that there was abnormal levels of mold there. And, these tests are just the tip of the iceberg, right? So it gives you a sign of where you want to start to look. But then as you open up, you're really seeing the problem unfold.
Now, were you able to, could you test the air first, or did you start with swabs, or how did you actually know, to begin? What was your clue? Just in general, that's what happens.
Well, it was actually a combination of air and swab. So we did an air test in the area, to look for any abnormal levels in that area. And we did a swab too. So, the trick is with air testing, you're really only picking up about a 3 foot radius from where you're testing. So it's not the most practical test at screening a home to find things. So you really want to be targeted with it and test really as close to the problem that you think it may be. So you're really looking at a difference of, okay, what's the air outside like, and what is that exact spot like? So you're looking for that elevation. And then of course, swabbing the area was good because you can take a Q-tip and get into smaller crevices to really see if there's something growing there.
It doesn't seem like everybody has an issue in a moldy home. I mean, I would suspect that we as humans have lived in a moldy environment for an awful long time, dating back as long as we've had dwellings, right? So what, how, why is it some people are very sensitive and others are not?
I wish I knew all the answers to that, to be frank. I think it's an evolving science that we're, learning more and more about every day. But, you made a great point. Mold's been around forever, and I get asked this question a lot, like, why does this such seem to be such a bigger problem today than before? I don't know that it necessarily is, and I have some things to kind of discuss with you on this that I think might help open the door to this discussion. For one example, actually, mold remediation, there's a mold remediation protocol in the Bible, in Leviticus, in the Old Testament, okay? And it says
No
that,
way.
I swear, if you look it up, it's really eye-opening. Then what they did was when they saw mold growing on the stone at the time, they would scrub it clean. They would have a priest come and bless it. And if it went away, great. If it didn't go away, they would do it again. And if it came back a third time, they'd actually demolish the house and carry all the stones about a mile outside the village and dump them so that it didn't cross-contaminate into other homes, right? Because we understand today that
Wow.
bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites are really the big four things that cause disease. And I think we really just forgot the emphasis around the fungi part because, we don't really ever cover that much. What's interesting about kind of what I think is happening as far as why it's becoming more and more apparent today than years past, we look back at our history here in America. In 1970, Richard Nixon, who was president at the time, started going into the energy efficiency sector where, America's a world power. We have to be more energy efficient as a country. And so we start going that direction. And since then, every president after has just kind of pushed that further and further along. Today, our homes are built way tighter than they were back in 1970 or before that. And what does that mean? How does that impact us? Well, I'll tell you. I mean, it means that we're breathing a limited volume of air inside our doors. We're not having as much air exchange with outside, which is a near an unlimited volume of air. And so the particles inside of our home then are not as diluted as much as they are outside. So for every breath that you take, and you're looking at like 7.3 million per year on average, you have an opportunity to bring a particle or toxin or chemical or formaldehyde and all these other things to worry about into your body. And so less volume of air, the higher quantity of particles and toxins there's going to be, which means when you have these problems inside your home, they could be much more detrimental to your health.
Well, one of the things that we're hearing about, and you're so correct on the fact that we're just living in this sealed environment, what can we do to the air in that we're breathing in our homes? We could talk about HEPA filters, but there's a move now to put something in the air conditioning system, either ultraviolet or an ionizing system. Have you had any experience with those?
Yeah, so the ultraviolet, you know, technology, it's pretty interesting because, you know, basically with what UV does is after about 10 to 12 seconds of exposure to UV light, it pretty much kills living organisms like bacteria, mold, etc. The interesting thing about it going in the HVAC system is the air passes through far too fast to really get that 10 to 12 second dwell time. So to me, it seems more of a smoke and mirror. Now, if you position it on the coil, it can definitely help prevent some growth on that coil, but the coil is thick. You're not going to have one UV light cover all the whole inside and out of the coil. So I think it, you know, it might provide some benefit, but I don't think it's the holy grail on this. The best thing to do is really filtration. I mean, the smaller the particle you can filter out getting into your unit, the better, because for those that don't know HVAC systems that well, you know, we have what's called a coil, and that basically provides our air conditioning. But it constantly condensates. It's taking moisture out of the air. It's dripping it into this drip pan, and then it is piped out of your home so that it takes the water away. But that coil itself is constantly wet. So when you have mold and bacteria, even viruses passing through, getting to that coil, it's a wet living environment for it to thrive in. And so I think if we start, you know, really looking at better filtration as a society, and we make that more important to our air quality, I think it's really going to make a big difference on the whole overall air quality spectrum.
Now, I'm not up on air conditioning that much, but does that coil live inside or outside?
It lives inside.
So that's up in the attic. Is that where that is?
Well, it could be in the attic, could be in a closet, your garage. It really depends on the style of construction, where it's built, et cetera. The compressor is the unit outside, and basically that holds the refrigerant, has a fan, and it's constantly pushing that refrigerant back and forth to the unit. The unit inside is really what affects our air quality.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, these days, again, there are other things that we could do. Could we not have a HEPA filter system in our home? Is that worthwhile? I mean, I see them advertised.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's worthwhile. I think, you know, in today's technology right now, pretty much the best filtration you could get is called MERV 16. And it does, you know, it is considered a HEPA, but it actually is almost a little better than HEPA. HEPA is actually 1940s technology. So really looking forward to more players getting in the game and helping us bring the technology forward. You know, we can do better than HEPA because HEPA really is 0.03 microns. Up to that at a 99% efficiency. We want to get really into the nanometer sphere because viruses are nanometers, certain particles of mold are nanometers, you know, we get to toxins and things of that nature. We're really in that nanometer spectrum. So if we could, you know, just get a little smaller, which MERV 16 has shown promise to do, I think we're going to be better off for that.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the individual who how do you suspect then that your house might have mold in it? What are you looking for? I mean, are you looking for people complaining? Is there a smell? Was there a water leak? I mean, what should make people suspicious that mold should be checked for?
You know, the multitude of reasons. You know, sometimes people will complain that it smells. You know, I got that damp, earthy type smell, like my grandmother's basement or something to that effect, right? And so that's a pretty clear sign because when water does come in, you will have that damp smell. When you start to smell that smell, it's usually microbial VOCs. So they're the volatile organic compounds produced by mold as it's growing and cultivating inside the home. And so that's a pretty good telltale sign. A lot of people call me because they don't feel well. And, you know, they're looking for someone who understands this a little more scientifically than the average person to do a deeper dive. And so that's obviously a very telltale sign. When it comes to air quality and building a healthy home, you know, you'll always find something wrong with a home. And so my job is to find, as many problems as I can find, and then also put together a practical plan of, you know, really making the most impact with the problems that are found, because some of them are going to be smaller and not as detrimental. And when you have those types of issues, we got to prioritize making an investment towards something that's going to make a difference.
So I call you on the phone and I say, I'm suspicious that we have mold in our home. And I'm just suspicious for whatever reason. Where do you begin? I mean, do you sample all the air, or how do you know where to go? I mean, there's certain places, you mentioned the bathtub, but how do you narrow it down once you're in the house?
That's a great question. I would actually start with the dust test. By testing your dust, it utilizes PCR technology. I think we all know what that means this day and age. It's looking at
our
the DNA.
Know that.
Yeah. It's looking at the DNA of what's in your dust. And with PCR, you can look at mold, you can look at bacteria, bacterial toxins, mold toxins. So it's kind of nice to be able to have this broad spectrum view, and you're looking for abnormalities, right? How the PCR works in the home is taking the dust that's collected, it's averaging it out, and you're getting, you know, particles per milligram of dust. And you're always going to have some level of mold. You're always going to have some level of bacteria. I hate to break that to people, but it's true. But there is such a difference as having a normal amount versus having a abnormal amount, where things are just off the charts here. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about it is when it'll speciate it, and then you can look at, is this 10 times higher? Is it 100 times higher? Is it 1,000 times higher? Which will give you some perspective on what it is. And for me as a professional, I'm looking at the species type too. Because okay. If it's Aspergillus penicillium, that can grow in humidity. Stachybotrys scotomium, that requires a lot of water, also more time. So that helps me understand what's going on with the home.
So you set up to measure air in ambient air in a variety of locations in a home. And then when you get your results, once you collect this air sample, then you ship that off to a lab?
Yeah. So any samples taken always get shipped off to like a third-party accredited lab. You know, we're trying to get unbiased information, understanding what's going on in your home, if anything at all, so we can either address it or have peace of mind. And so all of that stuff goes to a lab. You're waiting on lab results, which can take a couple of days, sometimes a week, depending on the test. And that's when you're looking over results and you're making decisions based upon what those results say.
And do you make a comparison of what's in any particular room with what's outside of the house in as a baseline?
Yeah, I do. And that mainly is because obviously our home, although it doesn't breathe as much as it used to, you got to look at the age of the home. You got to understand how much air influence is coming in from outside to inside and what really abnormal might look like. So just to give you an example, if I see Stachybotrys in a home, knowing that's a water damage mold, yeah, I will look for to see if it's outside, but it's not typically something that you see in an outside air sample. And so when you see it inside, you can always tell that it's got to be somewhere nearby, and you want to look for this more systemic leak that has been wet for at least 3 to 5 days.
All right. So let's say you find Stachybotrys, one of the bad players in the mold world, in a room. What's your next step? You need to try to find an area that is actually wet at that point, correct?
Well, it has to be either wet at that point or had to have been wet at some point, right? And so I know that part can be a little tricky because sometimes you can just use a moisture meter and find it right away. But if it's a leak that maybe was repaired last year, that maybe it's still in the wall, wasn't really remediated properly, then you're, you know, asking the client for the history of the home, any leaks you're aware of. And you're also looking, you're also kind of surveying the property to look for signs of water intrusion, because, you know, typically if you find in a room, it's most likely they're going to be on near an exterior wall or in an exterior wall or an interior wall that has plumbing associated with it. So even if there's not like a, you know, copper plumbing line, right, for a water supply, there still could be a vent stack, which is basically a plastic pipe that goes through the roof and allows for the gases of our toilets and drains and sinks and that nature, allows those gases to escape. And those are a weak point because they're just kind of rubber and tar that protect it from the roof from leaking.
Then what do? Do you fog the room?
No. So, you know, once we find the problem, for argument's sake, we're going to say we found a window leaking. We're going to set up a containment to contain that area. we're going to actually isolate that through pressurization. So we'll put that area under negative pressure or put the area around it under positive pressure just to keep anything that we're working on from coming outside of that area. And then we're going to have to open up that wall, unfortunately, because, you know, mold has roots called hyphae. It grows into things and you have to actually get back down to the actual surface of where it's growing and help remove it. And that could require some sanding, you know, things like hydrogen peroxide to help oxidize and pull it forward, and a lot of vacuuming, cleaning to make sure you thoroughly have removed it.
And when a remediation person comes to your home and they propose they're going to use XYZ chemical, how do you know what they're using? Is it safe? Is it effective?
Well, I think the first thing you should always ask for is a safety data sheet on the products that they plan to use. You can browse that. You know, even though you may not see them all the time, you know, you can see if there's anything known to be carcinogenic in it. You can see what sort of toxicity level is it. You know, this way you can understand the consequences of using certain products in your home, because some people have chemical sensitivities and chemicals being in their home is not going to be something that's going to work well for them. The good news is you can do remediation today with all botanical products, very low chemical output whatsoever, if you even need some. And so I think from that perspective, I mean, the way in which technology has come forward, that you could really do a green remediation, if you will, and use all botanical products and not have any chemicals in your home.
And that would actually do the job.
It would. I mean, one of my favorite products is a broad, is actually EPA certified broad spectrum product. They use it in hospitals. It's been known to kill, H1N1, HIV. I mean, anything you could really think of that's living, it's been known to disinfect and remove. So, I mean, having options like that is just priceless at this point.
Occasionally, you'll find mold growing in your shower, right? The floor, a little area might turn black. Do we need to be concerned about that? Or is that just a simple spray on some Clorox and be done with it?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, it's a 50-50 toss-up if you should be concerned about it. And how you kind of determine that is I always tell people, clean it first. You know, hydrogen peroxide is something great to work with grout, because you can spray apply it like bleach. It will, you know, lighten the color and make it look newer. And then it helps kind of pull everything to the surface. So you can scrub it clean and then you can wash it away. And it's pretty simple to do. I always tell people start there. If it comes back pretty fast, you may have a deeper problem there.
And would that be, what's the percentage on the hydrogen peroxide?
So I usually like to use 8% when I'm cleaning inside the home. You know, if you go to the, you know, CVS and buy the little brown bottles, it's usually about 3%. Right. And so, you know, usually you want to get more of a industrial strength hydrogen peroxide, which you can easily find online, but just want people to know that you want a little bit stronger than the CVS brand stuff.
And will that actually cause the color change, the lightening of the darkness?
It will, because it is an oxidizer. So it is going to pull the impurities to the surface and that will lighten the color.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to be concerned about using bleach?
You know, bleach. So bleach is a pretty harsh chemical, as we all know. And, you know, I've grown up around it, like I'm sure most people have. And it's got this very noxious odor. It can give people headaches and things of that nature. You know, if you use bleach, you're supposed to ventilate pretty well. I think you don't need to use it. So that's why I like to stay away from it. If you go on the EPA's website or type in Google EPA bleach mold, you'll find a nice article that the EPA wrote, and it said you shouldn't use bleach to try to kill mold. In fact, killing mold isn't the objective, because even dead mold may cause an allergic reaction in some. And so it kind of helps pave the way for kind of getting rid of bleach and looking to other options. Mm.
So peroxide, you can buy a 6% and that's going to do the job. Do we have to have any precautions about that?
Well, if you get it in your hair, it may change your hair color. So I usually tell people wear goggles, wear gloves, you know, maybe make sure your hair is out of the way, just so you don't accidentally get it on it, and use clothes that you don't mind if they get ruined.
Okay. Let me talk to you about that. Getting back to now, you've done your best to remediate a room, but the people took out furniture and clothing and all that. What happens to that stuff? How do you fix that?
Well, when it comes to contents, it all kind of breaks down to porous, non-porous, semi-porous, right? And so with that being said, anything that's non-porous, and the best way to understand if something's porous or not, if you were to spill water on it, would the water pool on top of it? If so, it's non-porous. Would some of it seep in to the surface and some of it pool on top of it? Then that's semi-porous. And if it would absorb all of the water and just get wet, then it's porous, right? And so when we look at that from that perspective, we want to understand how cleanable is something. And that's what it all comes down to. The more porous it is, the harder it is to really clean. And the reason that is because, you know, we got to remember these toxins, particles are very, very small, about 25 to 50 times smaller than what the eye can see. And so if you were to zoom in under a fabric couch, under a microscope 50 times, those little threads that you see as a human being with your eyes would look like gaping holes for something that small. And so all these things can get embedded deeper into our, you know, furniture and things of that nature. And so I've had people complain that, you know, I kept this couch because I didn't want to get rid of it. But every time I plop down on this couch, I start to feel a reaction. It says, well, that's because every time you plop down on that couch, you're releasing whatever's in the couch into your breathing zone and you're breathing it in. So the key is you may want to make that tough decision to get rid of that couch. And unfortunately for certain people, and obviously this depends on the many different variables, but that could be the case where you want to maybe discard more porous things because of its ineffectiveness to clean it.
Well, you drove around and you saw what people were doing. I mean, every street in my neighborhood had, you know, 10, 12 foot mounds of, you know, drywall, of course, flooring, of course, but, you know, furniture, clothing, drapery, all that stuff was just thrown out. And I think that people don't realize what a big deal this is. You know, you're not just going to dry your home out and go right back in, and nor will you be able to sell it because, you know, a buyer is going to want an up-to-date mold inspection. So how do we know with respect to the people coming to remediate our home, how do we know they know what they're doing?
$1 million question.
I've got a whole list of them right here for you. After I read the book, I highlighted your book.
You know,
and I
wrote your questions. Yeah, it's really difficult because it only takes like 3 days to get certified. You know, I have a certification that requires 10 years of experience to get. So I think the best thing to say is find someone who has, you know, a lot of experience, ask them good questions like, how are you going to remove this? What sort of engineering controls are you going to put up to prevent it from, you know, getting worse? What steps are you going to take? You know, because the steps really should be remediation, cleaning. You know, if there's an HVAC involved, which there always typically is, you want to clean that HVAC, then clean the home because whatever's in the HVAC is going to spill out into the home. And then you also want to, you know, post-test. And you want someone who's going to guarantee those results, right? You don't want someone who's going to come back and charge you more when things don't go right, you know, on their scope of work or what have you. You want someone who's going to guarantee it. And I think you really want to get good answers that make logical sense. If something doesn't make sense to you, it probably doesn't make sense to anyone. So, you know, always keep that in mind and ask those types of questions. Of course, make sure they're licensed, insured, and all that stuff too. But That's probably the brunt of it.
But by and large, if you have a qualified company come to take care of your mold issue, they ought to be able to fix it if they do all the steps. But it may be a really big deal, like taking down walls and really deconstructing your home.
Yeah, it can be. You know, it depends on the, you know, the type of leak, where it came from. You know, you got to look for all the opportunities allowing the mold or bacteria to thrive, and obviously address those things. And so it is very easy to miss something, you know, especially if you're, maybe you didn't have a flood, maybe you're just not feeling well, you think, you know, maybe your air quality is the problem, you know, hire a company to come in and find it. You have to understand that it is possible that you don't find everything on this inspection and that, you know, it could require more work. I mean, not every inspector is going to be a great inspector. Not every remediator is going to be a great remediator, just like any other profession out there, you know? And so we really have to really understand how the process works and make sure that the client is advocating for themselves, because not every professional will advocate for them.
In your book, you talked about a not-for-profit that you were starting, and you said that by the time this book is published, you thought that that would be up and running. Is that the case?
Well, it is up and running, but it wasn't up and running by the time the book was published.
Oh, but it's up and running now.
But it's up and running now. Yeah, so okay. It's called Change the Air Foundation. Been up and running since July of 2022, so just this past year. It's very exciting. We are, you know, a couple of big things that we're working on right now is legislative changes. So we have, I think, 13 states right now that we're working with to change legislation. This doesn't happen overnight, I could tell you that, but we're having amazing conversations. Bills have been written. They're being, you know, discussed in committees, in the Senate. Ohio is one of them with the Indoor Safe Act for Ohio. We have Florida on the list. We have Vermont. I want to say California, Nevada. I don't want to talk out of line, but we have 12 or 13 different states right now that we're working with, which is a big initiative for us. Now, what are we trying to accomplish there? Well, first off, mold is not considered a health hazard in any state in America. That has to change. And unfortunately, there are many states that don't have proper real estate disclosure laws, meaning I can have mold in my home, know about it, not tell another person, and then they can move in and have to deal with that. And of course, that's pretty unethical. So, you know, we have some of these situations that are happening to folks and creating a lot of unnecessary stress and financial hardship that we'd like to really move the needle on. And of course, if it's not a health hazard on the State Department's website, that doesn't help us move the ball further down the road with all the other things that we'd like to do in the future. One of the other things that we're doing is education and awareness, you know, making sure that people have credible information and accurate information to be able to make the proper assessment of how do I fix my home if I have a problem. Right now, we rely a lot on, you know, our professionals and our insurance industries. But it's really important that people themselves, when they're dealing with this, really know what to do too, so they can make sure they're not being steered in the wrong direction. Financial assistance too, and a couple others. But
you mentioned insurance. Is insurance kind of lagging behind in terms of embracing, you know, this issue and coverage?
They are. They are. And, you know, and we're trying to get ahead of that, essentially trying to understand how do we make this a win-win for insurance companies and the people they cover, right? Because if insurance companies go out of business, that doesn't help anybody. So we really want to make sure we're creating a win-win. I think that there, right now, there needs to be a new product. You know, we have flood insurance as an example, as a secondary product that people can buy. We need to have some sort of, you know, mold and bacteria product where people are covered, because right now you're covered for water damage, but you're not necessarily, you're capped on the effects that water damage creates. So mold and bacteria are created, depending on the state, you might have a $10,000 cap. So they'll take care of the water damage, but they won't take care of the mold or bacteria created by the water damage past $10,000. And so for some, that's fine, smaller projects, but you know, you have a roof leak that destroys the whole home. You're going to be have a problem with only $10,000 in coverage. And so there's some of that stuff that needs to change. People obviously need to be well educated on insurance. Right now, I think the society kind of shops the cheapest rate. And unfortunately, they're not transparent enough about what that cheapest rate means. So I think that people don't realize they don't have certain coverages until they need it. And at that point, they're kind of screwed at that point. So, you know, there's a lot of that we just need better transparency. We need better, you know, information and better products to make sure people are properly covered.
And one last thing I'd like to cover, and that is you have a YouTube channel, don't you?
I do.
And tell us about that. I was very fascinated to see that.
Yeah. So I have a YouTube channel and it's definitely something that I do to create awareness. I interview some doctors that have experience and seen people with, you know, struggling with mold exposure, bacteria, water damage homes. I also interview people and their experience with, you know, the struggles they've had in their own home. And, you know, when I created this YouTube channel, what I really wanted to do is I wanted people to be able to understand that, you know, first off, we're all different. But second off, you know, we all may have similar problems, but it affects us differently. And I think having that perspective is really important for us to learn how to help one another. when it comes to that too, I think a lot of people, they think that, you know, water damage inside of a home, they don't think it's problematic until it hits their family or hits their doorstep. And so I'd love for people to look, to watch these things and really see that the struggle that people go through because they didn't have the information beforehand. And if that happens, right, then we can not become an effect of these problems and actually be in control because we'll know something so we can do something about it.
I have one last question that just came to mind, and that is there any consumer-based mold testing kit or apparatus that anyone could use?
Yes. So go to thedusttest.com. It is a consumer-based product. It is dust testing, kind of like I talked about earlier. You test your dust. It comes with a shipping label. It ships automatically to the lab. You get your results, and it'll tell you literally specific species of mold or bacteria that you might have in your home, which is very helpful because you're trying to look for, is something abnormal? Is this normal? You know, it kind of gives you that answer of, do I have a problem or not?
So you have to send them a sample of dust. How do you do that?
So it comes with a like sanitized cloth. It's basically like a Swiffer cloth, if you will. But it comes from Cardinal Health, a medical company. And essentially that cloth, you collect dust with it. That then goes back into that sealed envelope and it goes over to the lab. The lab then opens it up, sticks it in the PCR machine, does the analysis, and it's going to tell us, you know, all the, how many spores per milligram of dust there are of all these different species. And we understand, I mean, the EPA did a massive study that released a massive study in 2015. A lot of people may know this, called like the Relative Moldiness Index. And what they did is they took 1,000 homes, tried to get an average of different species inside of a home, and utilizing that table and the technology behind PCR, we're able to see, okay, does this fit in with the average home? Is this more normal? Or is this a lot more elevated? That could mean that there's a source somewhere in the home growing. And so we're able to kind of utilize that and answer that question. Yes, we see something abnormal going on here. We may want to start thinking about what it might be and look further into it.
And again, the website is what?
Thedusttest.com.
Thedusttest.com. We'll put in a graphic. Michael, thank you for spending time with us today. This is really very, very important, and I'm very, very grateful that you wrote this book. I'd like, you know, I think it's a book really for everybody because you wouldn't know unless you looked. So thanks for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was fantastic.
Okay, bye for now. Well, I learned a lot today. I hope you did too. Mold is a really big issue, and I think that we've kind of been led to believe that, you know, in our efforts to remediate mold, we may be underdoing it in terms of what actually needs to happen, not only just in terms of the remediation, but in terms of the testing that we are employing to make sure that we have actually gotten rid of the mold in our homes. Again, you don't have to be in a flood, a broken water pipe, for example, an overflowing sink. These types of things can wet your environment and ultimately lead to mold, which can be quite threatening to your immune system. Thanks for joining us on the Empowering Neurologist today. I'll be back soon. I'm Dr. David Perlmutter. Bye for now.